Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News tonight.
One of the accomplishments, in my opinion, of the revolution was the creation of the independent electoral authority. It truly was independent. Since Kais Saied's power grab, he restructured it, and so it is excluding candidates.
That was former U.S. Ambassador to Tunisia, Gordon Gray, saying the country is coming election won't be fair under President Kais Saied. Details coming up. Also, UNICEF warns children in Burundi are bearing the brunt of the mpox outbreak, and world leaders gather for their annual meetings at the United Nations starting Sunday. These stories and more on African News tonight. We start with our top story. UNICEF warns children in Burundi are bearing the brunt of the mpox outbreak, with nearly 600 reported cases, two-thirds among children under 19. Though this is a rapidly evolving situation, UNICEF says there have been no deaths in Burundi and there is an opportunity to end this outbreak in a short period of time. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UNICEF reports children under 19 comprise two-thirds of the nearly 600 reported cases of mpox in Burundi. The agency says this represents a more than 40% increase in cases over the past 3 weeks. Dr. Paul Ngwakum, who is UNICEF's regional health advisor for Eastern and Southern Africa, is on a visit to Burundi. Speaking from the capital, Bujumbura, he told journalists the rise of mpox among children under 5 years of age is of particular concern as they represent a third of the reported cases. This, he says, underscores the urgent need for targeted interventions to protect children from becoming infected as schools have reopened this week.
This is a rapidly evolving situation and we are having new strains of infections. Every day we are thinking of how we can understand better the transmission modalities. I must say that we have not had any case of death. We have an opportunity to end this outbreak in a very short time period.
Ngwakum says the outbreak's geographical area is still limited. With concerted effort from all partners, he says the virus can be contained, the spread limited, and the outbreak ended with no lives lost. The World Health Organization reports the Democratic Republic of Congo is the most heavily infected country, with just over 25,000 suspected mpox cases and 723 deaths so far this year. Burundi, with nearly 1,500 suspected cases and no deaths, is the second worst affected country, followed by Nigeria with 935 suspected cases and no deaths. WHO spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris says vaccination is a useful tool in trying to break the chain of transmission. But this, she says, has its limits, as the virus is primarily spread through close personal contact within families.
And when people are living in difficult conditions, if they don't have access to the materials, to the soap, to the clean bedding, to the clean clothing, it's very, very difficult for them to not transmit. So the work my colleagues are doing at UNICEF, when you talk about risk communication, it's not just about telling people what to do. It's about making it possible for them to do it.
UNICEF says it is possible to halt the rapid spread of mpox if agencies act swiftly and have the means in which to do it. The UN Children's Agency is urgently appealing for nearly $59 million to scale up its humanitarian response in 6 African countries, including Burundi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ahead of the Tunisian presidential election on October 6th, the security services, judicial authorities, and the High Independent Electoral Authority have blocked or officially barred more than a dozen potential candidates from running. Opposition leaders say they have no access to Tunisian media, while President Kais Saied is using state resources and institutions in his presidential campaign. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi has the details.
In July, Tunisian President Kais Saied set October 6 as election day and said he would run for a second term. Some regional experts and former U.S. diplomats in Tunisia, however, think the election is not likely to be free and fair due to crackdowns on opposition leaders and critics and Saied's consolidation of power across all three branches of government. In April 2022, Saied, who was elected in 2019, extended his control over the independent High Authority for Elections by granting himself the power to appoint and dismiss its members. Former U.S. Ambassador to Tunisia, Gordon Gray, recently said, "This election would not be democratic or fair, as Saied is copying from former President Ben Ali's playbook." Ben Ali, who became president in 1989, was ousted during the Arab Spring protests in 2011 and fled into exile.
One of the accomplishments, in my opinion, of the revolution was the creation of the independent electoral authority. It truly was independent. Since Kais Saied's power grab, he restructured it, and so it is excluding candidates. And these tactics are very familiar to what we saw in 2009 when the rules were conveniently cooked so that Ben Ali would only have pretty lame opposition.
Gray was speaking at a recent panel discussion at the Center for Study of Islam and Democracy in Washington. He said, "Another similarity to Ben Ali is the muzzling of the Tunisian media over the past few years and rules preventing opposition figures from communicating with voters." Initially, the election authority barred several opposition figures from running in the election, while police and prosecutors raised other barriers to their candidacies with criminal investigations, arrests, and travel bans. Of the three candidates officially approved to run, only Saied and his former supporter, Zuhair Maghzawi, remain outside of prison. Candidate Ayash Zamel was arrested on September 6. Some other potential candidates attempted to flee or were jailed for alleged technical violations of election laws. Radwan Masmoudi, the president of Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy, says opposition candidates have been hampered in trying to reach voters.
At least 40 of the top politicians and political leaders and leaders of political parties are in jail and have been in jail between a year and 2 years. In addition to that, the opposition leaders, even those who are outside the jail, are not allowed to speak on public TV or public radio since July 25. This was a decision made by Kais Saied that they're not allowed to speak. While Kais Saied is speaking literally every day on public radio and public TV,
Masmoudi added that another barrier to a fair and transparent election is the government decision to bar non-governmental organizations from sending observers to monitor polling stations. Tunisian human rights activists say government measures ahead of next month's election are a trajectory toward a new dictatorship, and some analysts suspect a Saied victory will erode the decade of progress in building democratic institutions that began with the 2011 Arab Spring. When Saied dissolved parliament and declared he would temporarily rule by decree in 2021, he said he was forced to act because a divided parliament had stalled government activity and efforts to revive the stalled economy. In 2022, voters approved a new constitution Saied backed with expanded presidential powers. Some Tunisians have backed Saied because they hope he could boost the economy, although so far it has remained stalled.
That was VOA's reporter Mohamed El Shenawi reporting. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America, and find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. We'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs on WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. 1 202 1-800-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. In the past 6 years, award-winning Nigerian investigative journalist Philip Obagi has uncovered human rights abuses by Russian paramilitary forces in Western Central Africa. Despite facing personal danger, including being held hostage and tortured by Central African Republic rebels and soldiers, Obagi has investigated massacres, rape and oppression allegedly committed by mercenaries from the Wagner Group and its successor, the Africa Corps. He currently is in the United States to testify at a hearing by the U.S. Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe on Russia's imperial identity. Obagi tells VOA's Jackson Mfunganye that he was initially investigating the death of three Russian journalists in the Central African Republic.
I went close to the Central African Republic, went to Cameroon, tried to get into the country. It was difficult, but I still was able to ask questions, making phone calls, and I kind of had people tell me a little bit about where this journalist had gone to and exactly what the mission was exactly. So something struck me. I realized that they were not just going to confirm whether or not the Wagner Group was active in the country. They were going to look into every single operation that Wagner was doing in the country. Mm. And I wanted to continue from where they stopped. So that's why I began to focus.
That's how you started.
Yeah, that's how
basically
I started
following
to focus.
The tracks, yeah, exactly. Of these journalists and kind of finishing up the work.
Yes, what they couldn't complete, I wanted to finish.
So let's talk about these paramilitary groups, the Wagner Group and, subsequent group called the Africa Corps. What has been their role in shaping the political and military landscape of the CAR and now in Mali, as we know?
Well, they do a lot in the Central African Republic, much more than they do anywhere else in Africa. And before they came to the Central African Republic in 2017, much of the country was in the hands of rebels and militia groups that were seeking to overthrow government. So what Wagner has done that may be beneficial to the government is the fact that they've been able to keep Bangui, the capital, safe from these rebels and militia men. So they have they've been able to put themselves in very critical positions in government. The national security advisor to the president of the Central African Republic is a Russian. The communications advisor is a Russian. So you have Russian paramilitaries from the Wagner Group, everywhere in the country, manning some very important facilities, including gold and diamond mines. And you have Russian instructors, so-called Russian instructors, training the military in the Central African Republic. So pretty much what they do is, provide security for government and train local forces, but also, they are the police themselves in many places.
Mm.
Yeah.
They were invited by the government.
Of course.
Okay. So what are some of the things that you've uncovered in, the atrocities they have committed over the years?
Yeah,
some of the...
quite a lot. Their interest is in the gold and diamond resources in the country. And these resources are, scattered around the country, particularly in the northwest and in the northeast. And what the Russians want to do is to completely control these resources. The problem they face is that before they came into the country, these mines were under the control of the rebels and in some places, Christian militias. So to take control of these mines, they've had to fight. And they go into communities, open fire at the local people, they torture artisanal miners, women, girls.
Wait, so are they trying to scare away the people from these communities around the mine so they can take control of it?
That's correct. And they make no distinction between the rebels and the local people.
Civilians.
So they believe that even the locals, work closely with the rebels. So it's a way of scaring people away, as you put it, and also a way of, creating fear. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's what basically has been happening.
That was a Nigerian journalist, Philip Obaji. He spoke with my colleague Jackson Mfungane yesterday here in our Washington studios. You can hear Philip Obaji's full conversation with Jackson Mfungane on our Upfront show next week. And world leaders gather for their annual meeting at the United Nations starting Sunday. And the wars in Gaza, Sudan, and Ukraine will be center stage. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
This year's United Nations General Assembly will take place against a bleak global backdrop. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We see out-of-control geopolitical divisions and runaway conflicts, not least in Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, and beyond.
The Gaza war is approaching its one-year anniversary, with more than 41,000 Palestinians killed and 100 hostages taken from Israel still in Hamas captivity. But progress toward a ceasefire is unlikely at the UN gathering. Randa Slim is a senior fellow at the Washington-based Middle East Institute.
I don't see much traction. I think both sides, in this case Hamas and the Israeli prime minister, seem to be gearing up for a protracted war, protracted conflict.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas are certain to focus on the war when they address the General Assembly on Thursday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is also expected in New York. More than 2.5 years after Russia invaded Ukraine, peace remains elusive. Zelensky is likely to make his case for more military support and long-range weapons during a Security Council meeting on Ukraine on Tuesday and at the General Assembly on Wednesday. Richard Gowan is the UN Director for the International Crisis Group.
For Ukraine now, the big challenge is to stop Russia advancing in eastern Ukraine. The future of the war will be decided on the battlefield, not in the UN.
Russian President Vladimir Putin will not be coming to New York, but veteran Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will. Diplomats will also meet to discuss the war in Sudan. Despite multiple international initiatives, there has been no ceasefire, and 17 months of fighting has displaced over 10 million people and pushed millions more into hunger. New faces at the UN this month include British Prime Minister Keir Starmer and Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. And U.S. President Joe Biden will make his final U.N. appearance. Again, Richard Gowan.
I think there is still some respect for his engagement with multilateralism, but I think there's also a lot of regret that he didn't give the U.N. a greater role in dealing with the war in Gaza.
Following two assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump, VOA asked if the United States could guarantee the safety of more than 130 presidents and prime ministers who will be coming to New York City. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
We have pulled out all the stops. New York City has police everywhere. Diplomatic security is supporting Secret Service to also provide security for all the heads of state who will be here in town.
The Secretary General will kick off the marathon week of diplomacy Sunday with a 2-day-long summit of the future, which aims to reform the UN system to handle new challenges, including climate change and artificial intelligence. Again, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We can't create a future fit for our grandchildren with systems built for our grandparents.
Negotiations on a substantive pact for the future have been difficult, but it is expected to be adopted. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
We will have daily coverage of the UN General Assembly all next week on Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, and our Africa 54 television news show. You also will find more on the annual gathering on voaafrica.com and voanews.com. And now, time for our sports roundup. VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro here in the studio. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehez.
So, UEFA Champions League kicked off this week. What were some notable scorelines for the football fans, Mokbil?
Oh, Yehez, if we're just going to start it off, I would say there was a huge game. Aston Villa versus Young Boys, and I say huge simply because Villa has not been in the Champions League for a long time. They had a very successful season last season, and they came in and decisively beat Aston. They decisively beat Young Boys 3-0. Now Bayern Munich, probably with one of the bigger upsets, 9-2. They win 9-2 against Dinamo Zagreb.
Nine to two.
It's looking like American football, maybe.
Scores. <know.
laughs> And they had like three or four offside calls, so score could have been in the double digits. Really, really interesting to see how Bayern Munich is looking this season after having lost the Bundesliga last year to Bayern Leverkusen. Speaking about Bayern Leverkusen, they also won in their Champions League game. Their score was, we will get back to that shortly, Liverpool versus AC Milan. Liverpool went down 1-0 in the first minute, but came back and scored 3 to win 3-1. So 3-1. So shout out to them. And I would say Real Madrid had a, I wouldn't say as comfortable as they would have liked to win, but they beat Stuttgart 3-1. But Stuttgart really, for the first 40 minutes, were pressing them. And their goalkeeper, Courtois, really stepped up and made maybe like six or seven very, very big saves. Yeah, Leverkusen won 4-0 against Feyenoord. Yes, those are the games I think that were the touchable ones. Arsenal drew, so nothing to really to look at. And maybe one more, Barcelona versus Monaco. Barcelona went down a player and lost 2-1. But I think with the new schedule for the Champions League, they'll be fine. They'll make up the difference.
And the WNBA playoffs kicks off this Sunday with the most excitement the Women's Basketball League has had in years. And guess what? Could this be the Caitlin Clark effect?
Oh, yes, absolutely, man. The Caitlin Clark effect. This team went from being one of the, her team, the Indiana Fever, went from being one of the most unrecognizable franchises in WNBA. Last year, they were one of the worst teams in order to be able to get her at that number one spot for the lottery. But now look at them. Not only are they in the playoffs, they're thriving. They're going to be playing their first game against the Connecticut Sun on Sunday at 3 p.m. This is going to be televised on ABC, so that means, you know, it's very interesting to see even just the level of excitement that these big corps have in making sure that this is must-see TV. So, the Fever versus the Connecticut Sun, and then that's their first game, and their second game will be on Wednesday and then Friday. So they have a three-game knockout type of style where the first team to win two ends up advancing to the next round. So will be very, very interesting to see what goes on. Another two teams probably to watch would be the Aces. The Aces will be playing the Storm, as well as the Minnesota Lynx coming off of that championship run. They'll be a team to watch as well. They'll be playing the Mercury.
And the Giants live strongman competition had an insane world record that was broken. Fill us on that.
Absolutely, Yehez. The strongman from Burkina Faso, Iron Bibi, broke his own record that he set about 10 months ago, which was doing a dead press and clean, right, with the log lift is what they call it. Mm-hmm. If you just watch him do it, it's an insane lift because there's no movement. As soon as he puts it on his chest, he's got to go straight up. 231 kilograms.
Humanly possible?
That is no. 509 pounds, Yehez. What does that even mean for us mere mortals?
I don't know. Will. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.